This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Yesterday, the U.S. Senate began debating an overhaul of how the military deals with sexual assault. One proposal, introduced by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, would strip commanders of their authority in sexual assault cases and put that authority in the hands of trained military lawyers.
On Tuesday of this week, Senator Tammy Baldwin gave a speech supporting Senator Gillibrand's proposed changes. She added an amendment that asked for a study to look at sexual violence in ROTC programs.
Senator Tammy Baldwin is here with us now to talk about her support. Senator Baldwin, welcome to Central Time.
Delighted to join you.
Well, on Tuesday, you called sexual assault in the military an epidemic. Why has it taken until now to get attention?
You know, episodically, this issue has received attention, but obviously inadequate attention. There's been time and time again when the military leadership has said they'll have a no-tolerance policy, and then we hear about the thousands upon thousands of cases that are probably occur every year, and the very small percentage of those that are actually reported. And it really took, I think, having a critical mass of women on the Armed Services Committee in the Senate to really call attention to this in a new way and not take delay and excuses for answers during hearings when the military leadership was before the committee. The women on the Armed Services Committee have made a huge difference this year.
And Senator McCaskill, from your own party, has a different take on solving this problem than you do. She proposed not removing authority from commanders entirely, but also not allowing them to lessen or overturn decisions. And her idea is supported by the Pentagon. What do you think of that approach?
Well, I want to put it in a little bit of context because we're debating the defense bill right now. And in that underlying bill, there are literally dozens of new measures aimed at preventing, responding to, prosecuting sexual assault in the military. And these are all really important provisions, and there's bipartisan, almost consensus support of all of these provisions. There is one area where there is a disagreement that's become, under a lot of discussion, and that is whether the prosecution decisions should be left to the chain of command or taken outside the chain of command. And I believe it should be taken outside, especially because some of the stories that I've heard. When I took to the floor to make my speech earlier this week on this topic, I cited the story of a young veteran from Wisconsin who was sexually assaulted back in 2004 when she served in the Army. And she reported the crime and was interrogated over numerous days by someone in her chain of command and ultimately forced to withdraw her report, her complaint, and cited for fraternization. The assailant, the perpetrator, had nothing on his record, and that is just outrageous, and it happens way too often. And worst of all, it dissuades people who have been assaulted from reporting the crime.
Now, to look closer at this chain of command issue, there are people who disagree with this idea of yours to take it out of the chain of command in terms of prosecution, and they might ask, you know, if we can't trust commanders to do the right thing when it comes to sexual assault, how can we trust them with our military? What would you say to that?
Well, you know, the commander's responsibilities are really to have... it's much more of the defense function than a prosecutorial function. They do need to keep good order, and they will have lots and lots of responsibilities with regard to trying to prevent sexual assault from occurring and to try to create the good order and discipline in their units so that it doesn't happen. So they will not be left out of this whole equation. They'll be a key part of it. But the prosecutorial decision will be made by someone who's trained to make such decisions. And I would say that many of our allies across the world have already done this, and with better success in terms of diminishing the scourge of military sexual assault among their ranks.
What would you say is at stake for the U.S. military if the government is not effective in fixing these problems?
Well, you know, I think about our courageous servicemen and women who fight every day for our freedoms. In fact, you know, they put their lives on the line for us. I don't think that any soldier or service member should ever have to fear their comrades in terms of attack or assault. I mean, it's just outrageous. And so nobody should have to have that sort of experience while in the military, and we won't be satisfied until it's been eradicated.
Now, you added an amendment to Senator Gillibrand's bill calling for a study of sexual violence in ROTC programs. Have there been reports that you're aware of assaults coming out of universities as well?
The only reports that I am aware of right now are pretty anecdotal because there's no formal mechanism for reporting it as a sub-entity of the military. And that's exactly why I'm hoping my amendment will be adopted, to make an assessment of whether some of these new measures that we are assured to have passed to crack down on and prevent sexual assault in the military, we need to figure out whether they are appropriately also applied to the ROTC or not. You know, when we went through this, at first it was just active duty service members, and then we said, well, the service academies ought to be included too. And then we included the National Guard and the Reserve. And really, the only group that's sort of left out anymore is the ROTC. I think it's really prudent that at this time when we're taking such significant new actions, that we at least do an assessment to figure out whether ROTC should be included.
Now, in your speech, you mentioned the privilege of being the first woman senator from Wisconsin, and you've also complimented Mary Burke, who's hoping to be the first woman governor of our state. Is there anything stopping you at this point from an endorsement of Mary Burke?
Well, I think Mary is a fabulous candidate for the Democrats, and I'm really excited to see her candidacy. I am not prepared to make any announcements right now on your show, but I'm really heartened by her candidacy. And frankly, at a time when our focus ought to be squarely on our state's economy and getting us back on a strong growth pattern, her resume, whether it's in private industry, in Trek Corporation, or as Governor Jim Doyle's Commerce Secretary, it couldn't be better suited to the challenges of our times.
Well, also, to look at another recent issue in Wisconsin, you called on Governor Walker recently to extend Badger Care through March, which he did. How do you feel? Are you disappointed with the results of the electronic federal exchanges so far?
Well, on your second question, I'm just furious with the problems that the healthcare.gov website is having. You know, I still believe that the federal marketplace and frankly the state marketplaces that exist in states that went ahead and fashioned their own, you know, that's fundamentally sound. But there's doorways into this marketplace. There's the 1-800 number. There's the chance to sit down with a healthcare navigator and sign up in writing. But the major doorway to that marketplace was supposed to be this website. And with it not functioning the way it needs to, that has been a major impediment. That's been a huge disappointment to me. That said, we have to redouble our efforts to get people to enroll in whatever way possible, whether it's having the patience to wait until this website is fixed and up to speed, or to take the other doors into this marketplace. And I have to say I deeply regret the fact that Governor Walker opted not to do a state-based exchange with its own state website, because in most of the states that have done so, they're experiencing real success in enrolling people in their marketplaces, getting them affordable, quality health care. And I wish Wisconsin were experiencing that success right now. You know, there's two major decisions that Governor Walker was faced with. One was whether or not to create a state marketplace or punt it to the federal government. And the second was whether or not to expand Medicaid. And he made the wrong decision on both of those issues, in my estimation. I am pleased that the governor has decided to extend Badger Care for the 77,000 Wisconsinites who he was about to kick off, extend it through March 31st, because that will afford them more opportunity to enroll in the marketplace, and that's important. But regrettably, he did that by telling another roughly 82,000 Wisconsinites that they're on hold. They're in a holding pattern, and they're not going to be able to enroll in Badger Care as they were promised until later. And so it was, I guess, one step forward, one step back.
And I want to ask you one final question here. I know it's a busy day for you, because today, for instance, Democrats passed legislation eliminating filibusters for most presidential nominations. This changes a two-century-old law. Why was it time to make that move?
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things. First of all, the manner in which we moved forward one nomination for the D.C. Circuit Court, Patricia Millette, who has been filibustered for a long time, and we took this step because it's outrageous that they're blocking every one of President Obama's nominees to this court, which is a very, very important court. But I would also say the manner in which this was done has been done several times in the past. 18 was the number that was being bantied around when I was on the floor during this debate. So it's not unprecedented, although, certainly you'll hear a lot of spirited debate about that. But I think that people have looked at Washington and looked at both the House and the Senate with appropriate criticism about gridlock and not being able to get important things done. And we all struggle with how do we break that logjam? How do we break that gridlock? And in this particular case, changing the rules for consideration of nominations to the federal bench is an important way to actually get the Senate's business done. These are our responsibilities under the Constitution to confirm the president's nominees.
Well, Senator Baldwin, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much.
That was Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.